I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Well, welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teamsters Local 695, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Firefighters Local 311. Now, joining us from the Capital Times and the Nation, John Nichols. John, anything going on in the news?
Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, it's kind of endless at this point, isn't it? You know, and I was doing a conversation with somebody the other day, and I was noting that 2020 is the year that overwhelmed, right? You know, it's a presidential election year, and that's enough for most of us to deal with, you know, a lot of folks anyway, right? With all the crises, challenges, you know, frustrations associated with that. Plus, we've got a crazy president on top of that. Then you get coronavirus pandemic, mass unemployment, and I think, you know, it strikes me that we don't talk enough about mass unemployment as a fundamental reality going on right now. And now we've been confronted with the great original sin of the American experiment, unaddressed racial issues, particularly as regards policing. So you add it all up, we're not at the halfway point.
Why is it that the media is only able to capture one thing at a time with one narrative?
Well, there's, my friend Bob McChesney and I have written books about that. You know, one of the things is that, we tend to train people to follow just one narrative at a time, and that's media in general. And the reason for that is it's cheaper.
Is that it?
I hate to be blunt with you. Why do you have so much weather on, you know, right? Weather's essentially free. You hire a weatherman, that costs a little bit, but then you just take the National Weather Service information and you put it up in nice charts, right? So media likes inexpensive ways to tell people things that are important. It is important to know what the weather is. It is important to know about specific issues and challenges, all these different things. But it's cheapest and easiest to get on one steady narrative, and then how do you prevent people from, saying, hey, hold it, you're just telling us the same thing again and again and again. You get excited about it, right?
After a while,
like a Fox News alert.
You know, the covering the demonstrations, much as the demonstrations were covered during Act 10, mm-hmm. Were interesting, but after a while, they're not. It's not really telling you anything new. Okay, there's people gathered here, but you're not telling any part of the story. Many of these reporters are stenographers. Let me give you an example. Okay, so here in Madison, the police officers clearly are going to get the boot from Madison Public Schools. Madison School Board member Nikki Vandermeulen, for the last, I don't know, 2-3 years, has been saying that she supported him, but she voted against him because she didn't want the district to have to pay for the training of them. Over and over and over and over and over and over again. Listen to this story from Channel 27.
Youth who are seeking and asking for police to be removed from the school district.
Protesters are calling attention to inequities in Madison schools.
Coming to school can be a traumatic event if you are in a system that is not designed for you.
Madison Teachers Inc. Vice President Mike Jones says the union has changed its stance on officers in schools after hearing from the community about those traumas for students of color.
Part of recognizing that is understanding kind of both the explicit and implicit messages that we're sending.
Times are changing, and that everyone should feel safe in school. And right now, That's not the case.
School board member Nikki Vandermeulen wants to end the district's contract with MPD. The board's last vote split 4-3.
Despite her best intentions, officers in school are not appropriate because I don't want to criminalize childhood.
She doesn't want to criminalize childhood. Well, okay, if she thought that those officers were criminalizing childhood, shouldn't she have been speaking out against it a long time ago? Because, boy, criminalizing childhood, that's a big deal.
Well, in fairness, I think a lot of people have been confronted now with, you know, a demand that they think more deeply about stuff and review things and consider. Now, this issue in Madison...
Or they're running for the 76th Assembly District seat and trying really hard to move as far and fast to the left as they can. I mean, there's, in fairness.
In fairness, people are being confronted with questions about how you go forward, you know, from a point where we have a critical juncture. This is a point at which the school districts, city councils, states, the nation, are all looking at how do you adjust, how do you change, how do you move forward, and I don't fault people who may alter their previous stances and may advance on these issues. I really don't. I think it's actually at this point, it's a sign of recognizing the moment.
Yeah, we sure disagree on that.
But I do want, I do want things to change.
Right. Everybody wants things to change. But was there a problem with these officers? The Capital Times endorsed them and supported them. There are still going to be police officers in the public schools when there is a fight and there is violence. The difference is now the officers coming in aren't going to know the students.
Yeah, and I think that is something that the school board has to wrestle with. And... you know, it's interesting that that at this point the school board has kind of, they've struggled with this issue for so long, and I think this gets you to one of the core challenges. You know, when you struggle with an issue for a long time without resolving it one way or the other, and kind of, you know, pulling in different directions, you end up in a situation where eventually it's gonna hit you in the face. And at this point, you know, school districts around the country have all sorts of different models on how they do this. There are school districts that have their own security forces and that also have, you know, officers who are trained to work in the schools and respond to the school district itself. You're talking about a challenge where even in a place such as that, you might have an emergency situation, you might have school shooting or some, and so that's something the school district, you know, ought to be wrestling with. And frankly, I think the school board should sit down and talk about this in a fundamental way. The challenge now is that, to my view, the Madison schools are in such a challenging situation, such a overwhelmed situation because of coronavirus, and, you know, really this fundamental question of how do they start up again after this period? So they have a moment in which to really think about these issues and to figure out whether they can start up in the strongest possible way, best possible way.
Well, during this whole debate, you'll notice that other than a few right-wing police union leaders, like the one in New York, the police are quiet. Police don't like to get involved in politics while they're on duty. They really want to stay a million miles away from politics. But police are persona non grata in Madison now. I don't know if the general public is following it, but politicians have essentially thrown police right under the bus. The fact that the city allowed them to defund the police on Martin Luther King Boulevard illegally without any repercussions whatsoever in huge stencil letters kind of tells you the police are not in favor in Madison right now. Not thought well of. And we have a different police force in Minneapolis, and yet, because politics is nationalized now, everybody gets painted with a broad brush.
Well, that is always a challenge. And, you know, Madison has been more advanced as regards to thinking about how to do policing in different ways for a very long time, going back to when Paul Soglin was a 27-year-old mayor. So Madison has had
actually, even before that, David Cooper was chief before Paul Soglin.
Yeah, he came in under Dyke.
Right, right.
And
he was not Bill Dyke's choice.
No, I realize that. But it's an interesting thing that Madison has had different models of policing and has had different approaches. And, you know, it's an interesting thing that you say when you say police are non grata. You know, when I... I've been out at these demonstrations, and one of the striking things is that, you know, when there have been these, you know, like major marches, you know, police officers have been there directing traffic, guiding people out of the way. And so, you know, I do think that you have actually seen in recent days some examples of how Madison police actually learned a long time ago to work with demonstrations, to work even with folks that are critical of them. And, you know, not to try and provoke confrontations, but rather to try and, you know, let people exercise their free speech rights while at the same time, you know, keeping people safe. And so, look, this is now a time when there's going to be a great deep debate in Madison, in Wisconsin, in the country, and frankly, by the way, in the world, everybody's tuned into this, about how to change policing, how to make it better.
But because it's nationalized, it isn't going to be tailored to the community.
Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. Sometimes it will.
I can tell you right now, it won't. Because I've watched, ever since Ferguson, I've watched how this debate has transformed, and the police in Madison are not getting any credit for anything they have ever done. They're just not. It's, well, you know, there are a whole group of people, and it kind of confounds me, the Heidi Wegleitners and Brenda Conkles and Andy Heitz. They don't really believe there are criminals. They have the view that there really isn't crime, that everyone in the Dane County Jail is a victim. They're Pollyannas on this. I love them all dearly. I agree with them on virtually everything else, but they don't really believe there's crime. And they've always wanted to get rid of the police. And if they can find a way, they will.
But can't we agree that we've got too many people in jail?
No, not necessarily. There's probably should be more people in jail in some cases.
No,
I mean,
the mass incarceration
is
way over the top.
In the state of Wisconsin, yes. Yes,
yeah.
But in the Dane County Jail, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'd like to see some statistics. One of the things that really hasn't been analyzed in America is policing overall getting better or not? I really haven't seen an analysis of whether progress is being made nationally or not. I know we have these flashpoints, and it's understandable why everything that's happened has happened, because things are a tinderbox right now. And that was the most horrific thing in the world. And what happened in Buffalo was horrific. And the police in Minnesota slashing tires was horrific. I mean, those are all just horrible things. But just overall, is policing getting better in America or not?
Well, look, you're saying get the data? I think it's great. Get the data. You know, there are people that analyze this already. So it's not going to be hard to. It's not hard
right.
to put the data together.
Just like epidemiologists and virologists and everything, somebody can objectively look at this. Are things getting better?
But let me make a case here that when you get the data and when you pull together the information, it's also just also the sense of the moment that we're in. I don't think it's news that police departments around this country have been put in a situation where they do public safety, traffic control, but then mental health, social services, now, you know, even deeply rooted into and interwoven with the healthcare system, especially during the pandemic. And to my mind, there has to be an alternative where you train people to do those other tasks, and where you fund those other tasks, where it isn't just police officer. You know, it's much like what we talk about with schools, right? Where, you know, I think we accept that teachers are asked to do much more than teach, and it can be an overwhelming situation, and it frankly creates often more challenges than benefits, right? Because there's just too much demand on teachers. Similarly, I think when you talk about policing in this country, we have for too long thought that policing is going to solve all these problems, right? That somehow arresting people or, you know, having somebody there with a gun is going to be the solution. What I'm going to argue is that there are alternative models that work and that I would argue will work better. And so, yeah, changing our systems, our thinking, rethinking how policing is done in this country, that's a healthy discussion to have. And it's a safe, fair, smart discussion.
Right. But before people come to the table and have that discussion, there has to be some baseline of respect. And when I see M. Adams wearing a T-shirt with a pig's no sign through it, I know that you're really not going to have a discussion on any kind of constructive level with someone like that, because she is never going to respect the police in any way, shape, or form. We'll take a break. John Nichols with us from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works. Also, our friends at Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We're talking with John Nichols about what's happening in America with policing. You know, I saw an interesting piece about mental health and police officers, suicide by cop. You know, Madison has put a force together with officers that are trained specifically to deal with mental health. And yet, all over America, how to deal with people that are having mental health breakdowns is a really, really difficult topic. We don't have adequate mental health care in this country. And this is part of the problem. And the police have been screaming for years, hey, by the time the problem gets to us, it's too late.
Well, that's what part of what I'm saying is that, to my mind, there has to be thinking about whether cities, states, the nation have done the right thing as regards having large police forces that are seen as the tool to answer all these problems, all right, or at least to deal with, you know, all these societal challenges. And I'm just going to argue, I don't think that's the case. I think that there is a better model, and I think that model looks to moving a tremendous amount of resources into mental health officers, into people who are specialized in dialing down tensions with somebody who may need help. And this is not to say that police officers haven't been trained to do that. I think a lot of police officers have been. I understand that. But I think we've missed the ball. Now, since the Koerner Report, and fascinatingly enough, I'd argue since before the Koerner Report, we know that there are societal challenges that need to be addressed. And the mistake that we have made is to assume that policing and incarceration are going to be the solution for a lot of these problems. And I think we've gone way too far as a country. I think it has come back to haunt us again and again and again. And we have an opportunity now to think about how to do it better, different, and better. And, you know, one of the things you said before, you know, talking about whether people have respect for one another, right? And I'll just tell you this. Look, there are people who have justified anger, people who really are not just frustrated but furious that, you know, it's been more than 50 years since the Koerner Report, It's been 100 years since we had reports on the riots of 1919. And we still, as a country, really haven't wrestled with these issues in fundamental ways. And so I think that yeah, there are people who are going to be angry, upset, passionate, but that doesn't mean that they don't have ideas that ought to be in this mix, and that frankly, people on all sides of this thing, yeah, they ought to try and talk. They ought to try and have dialogue. And I'm gonna suggest to
you, that obviously works both ways. There are people that are completely disrespectful of protesters as well.
That's right.
I'm just saying that if you're gonna, there's still calls coming into the 911 center. I can tell you that probably most of the calls coming into the 911 center in Milwaukee County are from the north side of Milwaukee, where people need help, where they're the victims of violence. That isn't going away tomorrow.
Well, this is one of the reasons why, this model of community policing and community control of policing is one that we really ought to be talking about. Because, one of the things is that I'm always of the view that policing and public safety, whether it's policing or whatever model, if you go through with, folks who are trained to do, to deal specifically with mental health, specifically with challenges and problems that may require, some sort of specialization. It's like an EMT type circumstance for mental health issues and other things. Those are best developed close to home, close to where people live, so that people in communities can say, yeah, this is how we want to deal with these things. And when you get to a level of bigness, right, where, frankly, Robin Voss is pontificating about how Milwaukee ought to do policing or how Madison ought to do things, or even Donald Trump.
Are you talking about the Robin Voss that made sure police officers and first responders, he made it impossible for them to get workers' comp if they got COVID-19? Are you talking about the Robin Voss who took police officers and firefighters' right to collectively bargain their health insurance rights and union negotiations away? He is no friend of the police, John.
That's what I'm saying, though. But yet, we've got, because policing and because public safety has been taken, to a point where it's relying so much on federal money, on state money, on federal dictates, on state dictates, that, you really don't have community control of policing. You don't have policing, where it's guided by people where they live and where people are saying, yeah, this is what we want. This is what we need. I have another question for you, Sly.
But I will
we
tell you.
We elect a county sheriff, right? We elect a county sheriff, but we don't elect a police commission here. You know what I mean? It's an interesting thing that policing, the way that we deal with policing, the way that we deal with these issues, at certain levels is relatively democratized. But at other levels, it's completely undemocratic.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem with electing a police commission. I think that's fine. I do know that when there were cuts in Madison, the first thing that was cut was community policing. And so,
yeah, which is nuts,
right? And the police will say, well, we're doing triage. We're having to respond to these calls. In many cases, they're urgent. So we have to make these decisions. This is really complicated stuff. This is not, you can't solve this with slogans or talk about police criminalizing childhood. I'm going to play this story. I think Donald Trump is actually, he doesn't know it, but he has actually done so much damage to police officers by getting up in front of them and basically encouraging them to harm people. His cartoonish view of them. Of course, he would never have the courage to be a police officer. The damage he has done to police officers and some of the really bad unions that endorse him, they're doing as much harm to policing as the people hurling rocks and bottles at the police. I'm going to play this story for you.
Here's ABC's Maggie Rulick.
Tonight, symbols of racism being torn down around the world.
Oops, that's not the story I wanted.
As George Floyd was honored and laid to rest today, and lawmakers in both parties gathered on Capitol Hill to address the national outcry over his death, President Trump stayed out of sight all day. Out of sight, but still stoking division. Promoting a new conspiracy theory, the president made unfounded allegations against a 75-year-old protester named Martin Gugino, the man who was pushed by police in Buffalo last week. The police officers leaving him behind as he laid motionless. Two police officers have been charged with assault, but this morning the president tweeted Gugino could be an Antifa provocateur, charging the senior citizen appeared to scan police communications in order to black out the equipment, adding, "I watched. He fell harder than was pushed. Was aiming scanner. Could be a setup." The president was citing a bizarre report by fringe right-wing television network OAN. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo fired back at the president.
What do you think it was? It was staged? Do you think the blood coming out of his head was staged? Is that what you're saying? You saw his head hit the pavement. You see blood on the pavement. Maybe he fell harder than he was pushed. How reckless, how irresponsible, how mean, how crude.
But on Capitol Hill, most Republican senators ducked questions.
What do you make of the president's tweet this morning? And does the president need to be more cautious about what he tweets?
I didn't see it, so I'd have to, I'm sure that my office will be able to get me a copy of it, but I didn't see it.
The only Republicans willing to comment were those who have already been written off by the president.
Makes no sense that we are fanning the flames not at this time. This is not good.
It was a shocking thing to say, and I won't dignify it with any further comment.
Not even the president's own chief of staff would defend the tweet.
I learned a long time ago not to comment on tweets.
You know, when you can't get Mark Meadows, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm going to make a prediction here. You tell me whether I'm wrong. I think Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney are going to be around a lot longer than Donald Trump.
Well, I think that's a given. Yes, I think you are correct, not least because their terms extend beyond this year and that Donald Trump looks to be in really bad shape politically. But I also think that you're getting to a deeper point there, and that is that what Donald Trump's doing right now is strikingly damaging to the country and frankly to the people who believe or accept the statements he puts out. But it's the really troubling folks are the folks that say, "Oh, I didn't see it." You know, right? I don't always check on the president's Twitter.
Ron Johnson, who wouldn't even look at the reporters.
Yeah,
he just kept walking.
What news stories are, and they know what Trump is doing, and they have a duty to call him out. And they're not helping. You know, they're certainly not helping Trump by failing to call him out. You know, the interesting thing is that when Trump talked about sending the military into cities, right? You know, like literally going over governors and mayors to try and come up with some way to use the Insurrection Act of 1807 to intervene in communities across this country. When Trump talked about that, the blowback was so intense, coming from the mayor of Washington, D.C., and which, by the way, should be a state, and coming from people across this country, but also coming from people in the military and retired military. You notice that the president kind of backed off, right? He did step back rather than thrusting himself forward on that thing. And if you call him out, if these Republican elected officials were saying, no, the president's wrong about that, what he's doing there is wrong. And also, frankly, if they said, look, he's not helping the police in a situation like this. He's actually making things worse because he drives home the point or drives home the suggestion that you can't get change, that you cannot reform, that you cannot move forward as a society. And, you know, that's a awful, awful message to send at this time. And, you know, the Republican Party, which was for a long time better than the Democrats on quite a few of these issues, has just degenerated to such a point in the last, the last 50 years. But this is a big deal. And We ought to be thinking about it in a profound way. The answer on this thing is that we all have a responsibility to listen to hear people who are protesting and people who are, you know, rising up and making demands and making fundamental demands for great big changes. We have a duty to listen, and we have a duty to respond, because the fact of the matter is you cannot look at what has happened in Minneapolis, in Buffalo, other places across this country, and say, you know, oh, you know, things are going fine. They're not going fine. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest that every police force in this country can stand for reform, can stand for change, you know, can ought to be looking at it. And, yeah, it may be different in different places, but at some fundamental level, we've got to get to a better spot. And you know what's really interesting about this is if you look, even the Senate Republicans are now looking at the polls, and this is an important thing. The polls show people support the demonstrations. People support these protests. And you're even seeing Republicans in the Senate going, oh, maybe we'll have to come up with a plan. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is the best plans are going to come from the ground up, from communities in places across this country, and it's going to be really hard. It's going to be profoundly challenging, and people are going to be forced to confront their own, you know, stereotypes and fears and pasts. And, you know, will we get all the way to where we need to be? No, we never do. We can get a lot. We can do.
Do you agree with me, though? Police reform or reimagined, whatever, isn't enough. You know, there were 18 murders in Chicago over the weekend. We have to deal with the tragic consequences of what poverty has done in some of our great cities across the United States of America. And by the way, not just America. You know, there are just as many protests in Canada as there are the United States, and there is racism in the indigenous community. You got what the Royal Canadian Mounted Police did to a tribal leader earlier this year. The scenes of that are just horrific. But some of these confrontations have happened because these neighborhoods, there's a toxic mix of violence and mistrust and anger. If we don't solve some of those problems and we don't deal with economic inequities in this country, you can reform the police all you want, but you're still going to have violence and confrontation.
And so that takes us back to the Kerner Report, right? More than 50 years ago. And they were saying, you know, look, these challenges as regards policing are underpinned by economic, social, and racial injustice in this country, all of which has to be addressed. And so it's interesting. I was talking the other day with Keith Ellison, who's the attorney general up in Minnesota, who's taken over the prosecution of the police officer there. And I asked him about that, you know, because we were talking about, you know, all the societal underpinnings. And I said, well, you know, where do you start with this? And Keith Ellison said, you start with the police, because policing reinforces hierarchies. It reinforces social structures, right? And so if you reform policing, if you address police brutality, if you address the violence, then you have it's an opening to begin to talk about and to address other issues. You don't make policing last. You start there because it's the place, it's the juncture at which, you know, these things come together. But you don't stop there, and you don't de-link it.
Well, all
right.
But here is my concern. Okay. If there isn't a certain baseline of respect for police being part of the discussion in that reform, I know what's going to happen, and I know enough cops to know what's going to happen. Good police, the Brian Austins of the world, the captain from the Madison Force, they'll leave. If there is no baseline of respect for them and they aren't backed at all by politicians, they will leave. And the cowboys are going to stay, John, because the cowboys love the fight.
That's the issue. That's why you got to bring everybody to the table.
Right.
But you have to talk to the people who really are trying to change things, who really are trying to make it better on the inside and on the outside. And that is going to be difficult. It's going to be uncomfortable. But yeah, you want those police officers who really are passionate about doing a better policing, doing it better. You want them at the table.
Well, all you have
to the sharp critics at the table as well. Push people away from this.
All you have to do is talk to our sheriff in Dane County, Dave Mahoney, and how he deals with his force, which by the way is not as progressive or educated as the city of Madison force, but how he deals with what he sees when he sees bias and he sees resentment building, and how he doesn't keep people working in the jail for too long because he knows what can happen as far as building a bias and resentment. He has a lot to say about this, and he may be one of the most progressive sheriffs of the country. He's way ahead of the curve on this.
Look, I happen to share your view. I saw how he handled things going back, remember, a decade ago, dealing with the protests at the Capitol, when he was under immense pressure to take steps that would have made things a lot worse. And he stood up to a lot of very powerful people, refused to do it. And so, look, there are, again, I'm going to go back to my core point. There are people who are involved in policing who have a lot to say and who have a lot of wisdom on these things and ought to be at the table. There are people who are sharp critics of the police who have a lot to say and who have a lot of wisdom and ought to be at the table. Those discussions won't be easy. And, you know, look, they're not gonna resolve everything immediately. But that's the way we go forward. And I don't want to say, look, you can't be a part of this discussion because I don't like what you're saying, right? I don't like how sharply critical you are of policing. I don't like that you say defund the police. No, those voices have to be there. And yes, the voices who argue for policing, they should be there too. And, you know, you have that great big debate. And look, I'll tell you, it gets better, I think. A debate gets better when you've got more people involved and when you, frankly, when you democratize it. Again, it would be really, to me, it would be really interesting if we had elected police advisors.
Well, you know, this...
we actually debated it with the whole community.
So I don't... Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen out of all this because this country's attention span is very short, and now what we're seeing with the COVID-19 outbreak again building up, people kind of forgot about that, and we're paying the consequences. So we'll see how quickly after George Floyd is dead and buried, people will remember this because this country just has a very short attention span, very short.
Well, it brings us back to the media. And at some fundamental level, this country may have a short attention span, but I happen to believe that there's a young generation rising up that has a sense of urgency and that has been driving a lot of these protests and making bigger demands, pushing harder. And I'm not sure that they will lose attention, that they'll lose the focus. And as long as they keep raising these issues, it may be that the media goes someplace else. It may be that the media loses attention. But the fact of the matter is, if policymakers, you know, say, oh, whew, man, the pressure is off, we don't have to deal with this, they're only, I promise you, they're only a week or a month away from the next time that this becomes a crisis. And so it's time, Sly. It's time to have the really hard discussions. It's time to go really deep. It's time to look at real alternatives and big ideas. And I can tell you, you and I will probably disagree in the midst of that discussion, right? I imagine we will. But at some fundamental level, it's been too long. You know, nobody may get exactly what they want, but it's been too long, too much neglected. It's time to have that great big debate.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office.